We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the Barcelona Podcast, episode 78. Thanks again for tuning in. You can tap in your app and check out the show notes to subscribe. You can follow us on social media too, on Twitter at the Barcelona Pod or at HiltonD13. I'm Dan Hilton, he's Francesc Tomàs, and we want to just let you know the big news we have coming up, April the 15th, that's again this Sunday, we're having a special Patreon show. So to become a patron, or if you're already a Patreon, get involved in that. And if you aren't yet, you can go to our Patreon page at patreon.com/thebarcelonapodcast. Of course, just Google the Barcelona Podcast Patreon. It's the first page that comes up. For as little as $3, you can join our Patreon show, get involved with us, actually physically talk to us, and be a part of that show on Sunday. It's going to be a huge opportunity for us to enjoy and speak to the people who matter to this show the most. Of course, the listeners and the ones helping us make new shows. And as Francesc did announce earlier in the week, we also have now a closed group Facebook page, and there has been plenty of wonderful conversation happening on there, Francesc, and you can even elaborate on that a little bit.
Well, I pretty much am speechless as to how great the group is. The engagement from the listeners has been immense. I mean, we only recorded 3 or 4 days ago, and we've got 50 members already, but it's not the number, because obviously BarcaBlog.com on Facebook has 700,000 followers, but the interaction is not what this group is getting. I cannot, and I'm not going to name anyone because there's too many to thank, but the level of interaction is through the roof. I mean, people are writing huge paragraphs in order to reply to questions. The listeners are publishing posts themselves. It really is the best thing ever. I mean, I've been running social media accounts for over a decade now, and this last week has been tremendous, and I really don't have words to say thank you to all the listeners for engaging there. If you are listening to this, it's tbpod.link/group. tbpod.link/group. We are not going to advertise this group anywhere else, so if you are listening to this and want to join it, please come and join us. If you don't want to, then that's fine. We'll continue to do the podcast and bringing it to your ears on a bi-weekly basis. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about something we don't really want to talk about, which is the defeat in Roma and what it means moving forward. And then we're welcoming Musa Okwonga, who is a Manchester United expert who has been keeping a very close eye on Barca, and he can basically offer an outsider's perspective on what just happened. The Barcelona Podcast 78 starts right here.
So we're going to do, because of the nature of this show and kind of dealing with the loss, we're going to do something we've never done before, and we're going to start with La Ronda today. Usually La Ronda is the way we close the show. We have guests, but today it's just going to be, we're going to have almost a fireside chat just with Francesc and I, where we're going to try to break this down and cope and figure this out and look towards the future after that defeat to Roma. And these questions coming directly from that Facebook group that we have, the Barcelona Podcast. So these really are just you, the listeners, and we're going to go through these questions. To start things off, we're going to basically do these in topics, and the first topic is Valverde from Terry and Roman. Questions are, what now for Valverde? He's done a great job stabilizing the club after Neymar and everything this summer, but is he the right man to take the club forward? That's from Terry. And Roman asks, as much as I hate to say this, our nostalgia for earlier eras has kept us relying on players that are exhausted. Anderson Yeste is likely playing his last few games with the team. Is Valverde mea culpa, or to blame, for overextending players who should have been rested? Does he get another season? And my quick response to this, Francesc, is that looking at recent manager trends, at least for FC Barcelona, Tito Villanova being the exception and Tata Martino being the other exception, Barca managers are usually or have been given a 2 to 3 year window or 2 to 3 year leash to win about as much as they can. And then after that, not only the pressure, but just time with a club of that magnitude does seem to wear on human beings. And so usually there seems to be a mutual separation. So for me, Valverde is going to get another opportunity. And for those who want call for his head, I don't think that this loss, which is, as again, the third straight year Barcelona have lost in the quarterfinal, the previous two, not with Valverde. So I think he's going to get another opportunity here. I think he also deserves another opportunity. And we're going to get to what the trophies mean and all that. Again, I don't want to answer too many questions in one response. So I think I'm just going to say that my belief is that Valverde will continue for another season. And I think he at least has earned the trust. And as long as he's given the opportunity to change, that's what it is that if he's not willing to change, then I think his time is done. But after a loss like that, I think he is going to be willing going into the next season and throughout the remainder of this season, he's going to have to be willing to figure out and adapt.
I think Valverde is definitely going to stay next season. I am very disappointed about the way that he administered the team, and he has been doing that for the last, I would say, the last couple of months. If you go back to even the titles of our podcast, is how can Valverde avoid total burnout? Is Valverde right to be rotating? Or, you know, all of these questions that we've been asking, they have been going towards the same direction. We were fearing that the prioritizing for the unbeaten run in La Liga and, you know, playing the key players from the very beginning of the Copa del Rey was going to basically come back and bite us. And it has. And it has at the worst moment, in the worst scenario, and in the most embarrassing way that I remember. I mean, Barca has crashed out of the Champions League before in the last 7 seasons. We cannot forget, and this is probably quite an eye-opening stat, we've only made the final once in 7 years. Obviously, we won that one in 2015 with El Tridente, but I think we cannot really overlook that. Now, Valverde was not the reactionary manager that we needed in Roma. I think the key point came when he introduced André Gomes instead of either Dembélé or Denis Suárez or even Alcácer the moment Iniesta came up. That was very telling of how little he trusts his bench and how scared, and that is the word, I think he's scared, how scared he was to actually push forward for a goal. Like, let's face it, if we had scored one goal in the Olimpico de Roma, we would be in the next round. There is no question. But actually, Barca went on there to defend, and we are not a club that can excel without the ball. We are made to be with the ball. That's who we are as a club. That's in our DNA. That's what we should have done. Having said that, Valverde has added a lot of solidity this season. He's added consistency. If we go back to the beginning of the year, we were destroyed by Real Madrid, and we were fearing the worst. Neymar had just left us, and we had no alternatives to change. We had to quickly go and get Dembélé. And then the guy got injured for, you know, 6-7 months. We are unbeaten in La Liga, which, to be honest, I don't really care very much about that word, unbeaten. The word that matters to me is that we are leading La Liga comfortably. We are in the Copa del Rey final. It's not going to be easy against Sevilla, especially given how burnt out our players are right now. But I do think that the domestic double is a great result for a manager to achieve in his first season. Would I have loved the Champions League to be cherry on top? Of course. Am I disappointed we crashed out in quarterfinals? Of course I am. And I am gutted and I'm actually quite angry about it. But I think what we need to understand is that winning the Champions League is not a given. It's not something that happens every season. And as disheartened as we can be right now, it is the Liga and it is the Copa, but particularly La Liga, that we need to value, because the best team of the season normally wins the domestic league and we are miles ahead in there. And that's what we need to remember. With that in mind, we need to assume that if Valverde is to stay, which I don't really see Bartomeu changing the manager at all, is he going to have learned from his mistakes this season going into next? And that, I think, for me, is the main key.
So, Francis, you both agree that he's going to stay, but both Elliot and Michael wonder if Valverde were to resign, even on his own accord, and we would need to replace him with somebody. They want to figure out one of the best coaching options there. And they asked, Michael asked, should I say, to make a short list of 2 or 3 interesting candidates. And my thinking for this, if Valverde, again, this is hypothetical, were to resign or the board wouldn't want him anymore, in the way that Barcelona like to bring in players that know La Liga or other leagues, and I think of Rakitic, Arda Turan, Vidal, I think they also look for managers who know the same thing as in the way that Valverde came from Athletic Bilbao. And so for me, managers like Marcelino at Valencia, Juan Carlos Unzué from Celta de Vigo, and Eusebio, of course, who was just fired from Real Sociedad. And my thinking in the future, long term, that's why I said Valverde 2 to 3 years, is because all of these seem to be guys who would bridge the gap eventually to the prodigal son and Xavi, who is now retiring at the end. Next month, he's retiring in Qatar and looking to get his coaching licenses now. And so I think there seems to be in football, when something looks like it's going to happen and all roads lead to a certain way, and the way is going to be Xavi, and whether or not he succeeds or fails in a few years, I think he's already on the path back to become the first team manager. So it's a matter of who is going to bridge the gap between this moment now and Xavi in the future.
I do expect that Valverde stays, and I really want to see him succeed. I mean, he has done a great job so far, and he has all the tools in order to learn from his mistakes and move things forward. I mean, all of the candidates you mentioned, they're good managers. I don't think they improve what Valverde has brought. Quique Setién wasn't mentioned in your answer. I think he would be someone who aligns with the Barca philosophy quite well. But I think if we can get Valverde for 2, 3, even 4 seasons before Xavi comes back, that would be great. I mean, but I want to sort of put a bit of warning in there. Xavi's not going to come back with a magic wand. You know, he, as talented as he is, and his footballing IQ is through the roof, much better than any of us talking here, he's not going to come back and make miracles. It's all going to come down whether the board signs players who are truly aligned with the Barca philosophy and the way that we want to play. Xavi's vision is going to be incredibly aligned to Cruyff and Guardiola when he comes back. I mean, that's unquestionable, but it's not just about that. It's who is going to be promoted for La Masia, how many chances are those players going to be getting, and if we are going to invest heavily on signings, who are these people and could they actually work in a system like that? And I do think that for that transition period, given the first season that Valverde has had, we need to give him a vote of confidence so that he's going to learn from his rotation mistakes and be a bit more demanding in terms of signings so that we can excel in the short term.
And it seems like you might be a little psychic, Frances, knowing the next question I was going to ask from Rick. People on social media are calling for the heads of the board. And remember last summer's fiasco, of course, with Bartomeu out. And we were very critical here on the show. But to what extent does the board bear responsibility for this loss? And I blame them, honestly, I blame them very little. And because the way that the team recovered and responded to the Neymar debacle over the summer, that we were critical and deserved to be critical of them then. But then they reinforced with Dembele and Coutinho, who obviously couldn't play in the Champions League. But again, this individual loss, that 90-minute game that FC Barcelona lost, I don't think I can blame the board too much for that.
Probably not for the defeat in Roma, but actually, if you think about it, Valverde hasn't been trusting his bench. And if he hasn't been trusting his bench, it's probably because his bench is not that great. You've got Denis Suarez, who is a good player, but he's not going to start at Barca, I don't think, ever. André Gomes, same. Paulinho can do a job, but then again, he's not your prototypical Barca player, which, you know, sometimes he has added a bit of difference and that has benefited. So I'm going to sort of let Paulinho off a little bit with that. But players like Digne, they're not really challenging for a starting position. I mean, Vermaelen has miraculously had a better season than before, but, you know, he's not of a caliber that can start at Barca. Yerry Mina hasn't really featured. Semedo was the only signing, actually, that started in Roma out of the ones this season. Dembele hasn't really proven himself yet, but then again, he's young. We can be given the benefit of the doubt. Coutinho wasn't available. I think Coutinho is a good option as well, but, you know, if you've got a manager who is not promoting from La Masia, that may be because things haven't been done right there, and that comes down to the board. If he doesn't trust his bench, that also could be with the lack of quality that the bench has. So I think the board does have quite a bit of blame on that, not particularly on the game of Roma, but I think the overall planning was flawed for sure.
Now we're going to combine that answer with two other questions moving forward. Sophia asks, when do we start relying on our youth team and second string and use them for quote-unquote easier games and forcing our first team talent to rest? I know Messi hates to rest, but he's not 20 anymore. And then a question from Mutaz, why is it so hard to get our attacking possession tiki-taka game back? Is it coaching or personal? I feel like I haven't seen Barca attacking football all year long. And Mutaz has a good point here. You look at teams with half our talents playing beautiful football. Liverpool, who are not half our talent, and Napoli, who also, I wouldn't say half our talent, but they are playing the 4-3-3 and more of the Barcelona style than seems like Barcelona is. to first look at that first part of that is that for me and the youth team, we talked about Barcelona B all season long, and it's not that the first team is trying to integrate those players, but it's that they are fighting in a relegation battle. Their results recently have not been very good, and they now have to, for the remaining 7 matches of the season, 5 of them come against the top 5 in the Segunda Division table. And it looks like the way that Barcelona B have been playing recently, that they will get relegated. And as we talked about over the summer, that is very, very bad news for the continued development. And that's what we've been talking about from the start, that La Masia players simply just aren't being developed properly, it seems like, anymore, and ready to be put into the first team. And now we're seeing the issues with that. And particularly if this team itself isn't talented enough to stave off relegation, we're going to have another issue next year when they're playing in the Segunda Division B. And to me, the catalyst for all of that, and the very first domino to all of this season, long-term injury to Jose Arnaiz, who we saw in the Copa del Rey early on, and a long-term injury as well to a midfielder in Ferran. Those two, I think, Arnaiz even more so than Ferran, were the two major issues and catalysts for Barcelona B, where they just could not have enough bodies, and they just didn't have enough top-level starters who were ready to be continued starters. I mean, we talk about Puig or the younger guys coming from the juvenil team, but they just aren't guys who are going to make that difference just yet. Again, they're 17 years old, but for Anaïs in his early 20s, he was going to probably, other than Alenia, be that other best player on the team. So that's why I think they just haven't had the strength of depth in the B team either to be able to bring up guys. And that said, with that 4-4-3, the way that Liverpool and Napoli play, they play for that 4-3-3. Barcelona play now in a 4-4-2. That's what they do. And the reasoning there is that Barcelona was so influential during the Pep years. They won both Barcelona and Spain, and they won everything. And then the rest of the world copied them. And Barcelona then were behind the eight ball because everyone else was doing the exact same thing. So Barcelona changed under Luis Enrique, and they adapted to that. And maybe now we're looking at the way Liverpool's succeeding and Napoli are succeeding. Maybe it's time that Barcelona got a little younger and started to do that again.
Well, there's 2 points in there that you're making. I mean, the La Masia, I think I agree with everything that you said, basically. But I would think that the promotion to the first team, if it had been a little bit more real, rather than just Alanya once in the Copa del Rey and Arnaiz twice in the Copa del Rey, if you had actually been more meaningful, then you're not basically taking players away from the B team, but you're giving them the chance, you're giving them exposure, you're taking the ceiling off, and you're actually saying, guys, if you perform well for the B team, you are going to make it into the first team, you are going to get that last level, there is the step in order to basically be at the top of the spotlight and play alongside Messi, Suarez, Iniesta, etc. And that has not really happened. I mean, for what Digne has done this season, you could have had Cucurella coming up. If he's not going to be playing every single game, then that's fine. Just leaving the B team and excelling there. Alanya has got more than enough quality to make substitute appearances that, say, Dennis has been making, Andre Gomez has been making. That could have been a spot for him. Arnaiz, of course, unfortunate that he got injured. But there's other players. I think La Masia has to see that he's not just going up to Barca B and then everyone for themselves in order to build a career so they can go on loan somewhere. They need to see that there is a path to the first team, which at the moment is not clear. Now, talking about the tiki-taka style, I think you need to have the players that understand the system. You have to have the physicality, because everyone sort of focuses on how quickly Barca were playing. But when Xavi was at his peak and Iniesta was at his peak and Busquets was sort of starting, but associating with those two and obviously everyone in front, they were very physical. You know, the amount of kilometers that Xavi used to cover, that was insane. And they could get everywhere fast. And that is just not happening, because everyone in the Barca squad right now is either 30 or nearing 30 or over 30. So there's not really youngsters that are going to take that physicality away. And of course, players like Rakitic have been doing a great job. And that's why I think he's one of the stars, if not the star of the season with Messi. But, you know, we need more people that can be that physical with a footballistic IQ that Rakitic has shown. And we just don't have enough depth for us to play like that. And I think that's what Valverde has had to compromise. But everything comes back down to who is in the squad, why are they in the squad, and what is the future with them, and obviously the present.
Well, the way Barcelona played this year, this is coming from me, as this is kind of like our last chance for a thought here before we go to the interview, is that do you think with Rakitic and Busquets being so similar this season in the role that they play, if Barcelona want to play on the front foot and be attacking and go back to that 4-3-3 in the style of Cruyff, is there room for both Rakitic and Busquets in the starting lineup? And again, they both are starters. They both deserve to be starters. But I don't, I'm kind of reevaluating and rethinking now after that Roma game if there's room for both of them.
I think if Valverde had rotated the team well enough, there would have been enough in reserve in terms of stamina for us to play like that. I don't think that 4-4-2 is flawed in itself, because obviously that changes into a 4-3-3 in attack. If you got Dembélé, which obviously should have been our starter this season, but injury didn't let him do that, he can be our third attacker moving forward. And, you know, when you do that, depending on which way the ball goes, you oscillate to the left with Jordi Alba joining, or you've got Sergio Roberto overlapping on the right. So basically, it's a 4-3-3 in attack, which effectively becomes five forwards when Roberto and Alba actually join in attack. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad idea, but you need Dembélé to be able to track back, and then Busquets and Rakitic, and obviously in the other side, hopefully will be Iniesta again next season, because he won't leave us. Please don't leave us. But it probably will be Coutinho. They need to be physical enough in order to meet the demands, because say in the Roma game, we got outplayed by a very physical, not that much quality in that midfield, but the battle from a physical perspective in terms of stamina and strength and desire, we definitely lost that really badly, and that just is unacceptable.
Yes, that's all the time we have in La Ronda. We also want a special shout out and thanks to Danny, Mark, Jose, James, Jose, and Artharva for their questions. Really good questions that we just didn't have time to get to today. So again, thank you for those questions, and again, keep them coming, particularly in that Facebook group. And again, that's tbpod.link/group. That's where you can get involved in what really is a closed group Barcelona podcast community only for you, the listeners. Now time for La Entrevista from Musa Akwanga, who may be a Manchester United fan, but Frances and he were able to get into things way beyond Manchester United, and of course talking about Barcelona. And yes, you will have to hear something or two about somebody that you love to hate in Jose Mourinho. Let's get right to that interview.
Right, so we are delighted to welcome Musa Akwanga, who is an incredibly talented journalist. Obviously, he's worked for many different outlets. We spent some time at ESPN SoccerNet, that then became ESPN FC together. He's now a poet and even a musician, incredibly talented person to have. Welcome to the show, Musa. How are you today?
Thank you for having me. I'm very flattered, actually. So thank you. Yeah, been looking forward to it all day and boasting to my friends. So yeah, thank you.
Well, brilliant. Good. I've been looking forward to it as well. So let's get started. We'd like to start talking a little bit about your background, because obviously you're not necessarily a Barca fan as such, but you have been a passionate football fan for years. And I know your heart lies with Man United, because obviously that's what you've been writing about for many, many years. So tell us a little bit about your background and your passion growing up.
Yeah, so shout out to my granddad, who actually coached the Ugandan national side for several years. Yeah, back in the 60s and early 70s, when we had a really good team back then. That was the passion that's always been my family. A couple of my uncles played for the national team as well, and they're now living in the US. So that's the passion came from. And, you know, Man United, really, my mum was a medical student at Manchester University. And so they're one of the first teams I got into watching, sort of, and she had that passion. So I guess I sort of took it from her. And in terms of my own personal life, my professional life, I started off as a lawyer actually many years ago, and then left my job as a lawyer to be a writer, to be a poet actually. And since then, I've gone to become, as you rightly say, a poet, football writer, I guess a political journalist and a musician. So it's a really nice mix. Yeah, and here I am now.
Wow, that's a mix that I'm very envious of, because obviously you seem to be an expert in many different fields. So obviously you mentioned Manchester United in there, who are going through a transition period, it's safe to say. Mm. Obviously achieving plenty of success in the late 90s and early 2000s with Sir Alex Ferguson, who obviously is no longer then. And from that moment, you've been sort of in nowhere's land, if that's fair to say. So how has that period of transition been? Because it's been several years now.
Well, it's been like, I mean, you look at Barcelona before the Cruyff years, we're kind of back there again, you know. And as a United fan, luckily being a bit older, I'm 38, so I remember life before Ferguson. So this is actually, it's not like, I mean, it's not as bleak as that at some points, but, you know, I've experienced the fallow periods, as we would call them in football, as I'm sure Barcelona fans are, and you're actually doing fairly well right now, you know, even with the recent result. So I suppose what United are experiencing right now is actually what normal big clubs experience. And I think it's important to look at Ferguson as a real anomaly. I mean, he was one of the greatest coaches of all time. And you have to enjoy those moments, what they are, but also not seek to beat yourself up too much if they don't come back again, because, you know, Ferguson was frankly a one-off.
Right. I'm hearing a little bit of similarity there with Barca post Guardiola, because our fan base keep sort of looking back and thinking, oh, we played so well and it was the most effective way. It's the only right way to play and we were so successful and look at us now. How do you see that?
Well, I think, to be correct, let's be very honest, that passing style, the Barca style, did not fail. Xavi just got knackered. There was a game when Leverkusen, you played Leverkusen, I think, away from home. I think it was 3-1, late result, late goals came. And Xavi wasn't playing. And the speed of the passing dropped about 20%. Like, that, to play at Barcelona's level, to play at that Guardiola level, everything has to be in sync. Everyone has to be fully fit. And it's all got to flow. This is the problem that, you know, Barca have had in some of these tournaments recently. Like, you know, match control, when players are getting older, not fully fit, haven't got their eye in. Because when Barca are on, it's like a symphony. It's the most beautiful thing any of us have seen. And I can understand Barca fans being nostalgic for that time, because I love watching them. But, you know, Iniesta is no longer capable of doing that however many games a season. It's just not the case. You haven't got the strength and depth of the bench. So I get the Barcelona fans bemoaning that. But at the same time, I would say, look, you know what? Guardiola and that Barcelona team was the perfect alignment of all those players who've come through the coaching system, Guardiola, who knew the club, and then you sprinkle David Silva on top, arguably the greatest under-pressure goal scorer Spanish football has ever seen, arguably. So, you know, there were a lot of things that came together. And you need to look at history as, yes, this was a spectacular high point, but frankly, they're going to look at Guardiola's Barcelona one day like they looked at ancient Egypt. It's like so... It's a transcendent period of football, and you can't beat yourself up if you don't get back to that point in the next 2-3 years.
Okay, I definitely get that. And that's something that we've been talking about in the podcast throughout the year now. I want to pick your brains as a sort of an outsider then, because that's the whole point of having you here today. Do you think Barca fans should really forget about that style of football and go sort of more result-based? Or do you think we should be playing the right way, or the Guardiola way, or the Cruyff way even? Even if we win or not,
keep playing the Cruyff way, because it's effective. It's effective and it works. It wins games. The problem Barcelona have is not the philosophy, it's the personnel, right? It's the personnel. So you look at the Barcelona bench, you've got Denis Suarez, Andre Gomes, you know, these players, they're good players, but they're limited either, you know, in terms of the mental side or the technical side. Paulinho, you know, these are good players, but the Barcelona level, you know, if we're talking about the Barcelona level of player, you do need players like the kind of, you know, where is the young Moussa Dembélé, right? Mm. Where is that kind of player? You need to find them because they exist, and then you put them into the system. So I wouldn't say abandon your philosophy because of, you know, a couple of bad eliminations in Champions League. Look at why you've lost. Look at those losses away from home. You lose to Juve 3-0. You lose to PSG 4-0. Look at the lack of match control in the centre of the pitch. Look at the lack of depth. Look at a player like, obviously, Paco Alcácer, you know, who scored, what, 6 goals, 18 matches this season. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a good... That's not enough depth, you know? Do you know what I'm saying? And that puts pressure on the entire squad. Look at the recruitment. Look at the fact that Dembélé was brought in at the last minute. Look at the way that Coutinho came in. These players don't have a pre-season. They're ineligible. You know, what happened? The elimination of Barca to Rome, which we'll get to in a second, it was really the perfect storm of a lot of problems that have been brewing for Barcelona over the course of the last... year, 18 months. I mean, what, Luis Suarez got his first goal in Champions League in a year in the first leg? I mean, come on. You know, there's the intensity that Suarez is playing at for so long. And the problem with that intensity is it unravels very, very quickly. Deterioration, look at Shevchenko, happens very, very fast. They're a big striker. And Suarez does care, but it's almost like he's pushing himself and the tank is emptier than he thought it was. And he almost can't believe his own body is failing him or his intensity is failing him. So don't abandon the philosophy, stick to the plan, and just get the right personnel in, and the results will come again.
That makes perfect sense. There's been something that has been sort of brewing over the last, I would say, couple of days. I think in that La Masia, which is obviously the Barca Academy, has lost importance. Valverde has been the first manager in the last 4 or 5 seasons that hasn't made a single La Masia player play, even if it was, you know, in the sixth game in the knockout stages when we were already qualified. That didn't even happen. Luis Enrique was not a big believer either, but he, you know, called up a couple of players here and there. Do you think we're losing the essence of who we are because of La Masia not having a protagonism that he used to, or is it just that the La Masia is not producing players that are good enough? How do you see it?
Great generations are cyclical. Okay, look at the German national team. You've got some fantastic players now. They're good players. They're fantastic, but they're not great. Not yet. They're just very good. Look at France. France have Clairefontaine. Everyone's like, oh my goodness, France have the model. What have France done, you know, in the intervening period? Now they've got a great squad of players, but is the leadership there? You know, do they have the kind of the hard men, the kind of the tough mentality to take some extra stage? I'm not sure. So no matter how good your coaching system, great players, great generations are cyclical, right? That is vital to remember. Now, what I'd also say is, what you can help yourself with, you know, Valverde, I'm reluctant to criticize Valverde and Enrique because they're pragmatists and they won very quickly. And, you know, let's not forget, Valverde's unbeaten in the league. He brought in Paulinho, whose form's deteriorated, but Paulinho has, you know, he started with a great impetus and he filled a gap in the squad. And I think Valverde came in and he thought, you know, what can I fix very, very quickly? Because let us not forget that at the start of the season, Piqué was saying how he felt inferior to Real Madrid, right?
Yeah.
What Valverde has done this year is absolutely incredible. It is incredible. Even with this elimination, this horrible result, some could say the match control was not there, but Valverde restored Barcelona to a position they didn't think they'd be in. And people can't forget that.
No, and that was really clear. With basically hit rock bottom against Real Madrid in La Supercopa de España at the
beginning
of the season.
Right.
I remember doing a podcast, the Front Three podcast. They were inviting me for that, and I was talking about the expectations for the year ahead. And I did say, well, to be honest, I think we're going to challenge for the treble until the very end, which we sort of have done. I mean, I would have liked
to go a little bit
longer. But they were laughing at me, and I thought, well, it's a team under transition, and I have to agree, Valverde has done a great job, but I think the rotation hasn't really been all that...
That has killed you. But that's because he knows the depth is poor. Look, Gomez came out. How many footballers at that level come out and say, I've been struggling mentally?
None.
Valverde is in training every day, and he's looking at Suarez, Gomez, you know, and he's a nice dude. He's not only a pragmatist, he's a nice dude as well. He's like, I can't subject these people to this pressure. That's why all these players having extra minutes. These players are knackered. They're off their feet. And then let's put it this way. It's the perfect storm because you've got all these players who are knackered and then you put them up against a midfield three like that. The most combative, aggressive Strootman, Nangolan, like De Rossi, that's brutal. That is the most brutal examination of a team that's already exhausted from rotation, if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, look, do you remember that amazing midfield for Juventus 2015, right? 2015 midfield in the final, and you had Vidal, Marquisio, Pogba, and who's the other dude? And Pirlo at the base. And that midfield had two of the best pressing players in European football. But because Barcelona had a better depth, they had the front three that were so devastating, and you know the midfield three that were less like in sync and well rested, well rotated. They blew them away. But you know when Barca lose intensity, teams that press high, press hard like Roma, they will overwhelm them. And that's just what happened the other night. That was the perfect storm. Rotation meets the team that will chase you for, you know, 180 minutes.
For sure, I agree. How did you react to the game? How did you react to the result? Because we blew away a 4-1 advantage, which has never really happened. I mean, in living memory, going back to 20, 25 years, I don't remember anything that horrendous happening in an unexpected manner. So what was your reaction? How did you react?
At first, I was shocked, but then, you know, hindsight's very powerful because I remember thinking at the time that 4-1 is what you call a false friend. It was a false result. You know, they made errors they hadn't made all season, those defenders. And then, you know, De Rossi and Costas Manolas got these horrible own goals. And then you look at the game, the start of the game in Rome, and Umtiti did something he's never done. Umtiti allowed Dzeko to walk through the middle of his defence. How often has Umtiti done that, like, all year?
Never.
Like, he's not the dude. Right? It's unthinkable, right? It's unthinkable. So all these players had their bad night at the same time. Messi actually didn't have the best game in the leg either. So, you know, the 4-1 was a result that created a false sense, I think, of security. And then, of course, you have Valverde's decision not, as Asit Mohammed Butt noticed this on social media, not to hit Roma or keep them at the break with pace. So not to sort of have pace as a threat, as an outlet. And so basically Barcelona was sitting on the ropes going, come and hit us.
Yeah, for sure. I think the inclusion of André Gomes when Iniesta came off is really telling, because you had Dembélé that could have come on. And, you know, he's not the most defensive player, obviously, but he would have pinned down the defenders from coming up, and he would have given them something else to worry about. Denis Suarez hasn't been brilliant all season, but he would have had options of that as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, even Alcácer would have been a different option, but no, he went for the most defensive, and in a way, sending a message to the players of, we're losing 2-0, but actually, as long as we don't receive any more goals, we're all right. And at Barcelona, we just not like that. That's not in our DNA. We can't just defend.
Right, absolutely. And I think, look, I'm very much a believer in philosophy. You look at Liverpool and Klopp, and Liverpool have been rewarded for being true to themselves. This is the lesson now. Like, be true to yourself. Play your football. Because if you get eliminated, that is your saving grace. You know, we went out playing our style. And that sounds like that sounds pathetic, but I'm a Manchester United fan, and we went out against Sevilla and we didn't give it a go. And that's why the defeat was painful. Losing in football, you know, it's not ideal, but when it happens and you've given the best account of yourselves in terms of the style you play in, then that's beautiful. You know, a loss can be a beautiful thing. And the problem that you have and that we have, United, is that we did not lose in a beautiful way. And that's why I think we're ultimately most upset about it.
Right, so what is next for us then? What's next for Barca? Change the manager, change the board, have an election, total squad?
No. Keep the manager.
Okay.
Don't forget, Coutinho hasn't had a pre-season. That's vital. That's going to be a big deal for you. Get more investment at the centre midfielder. You need a centre midfielder, no question. At least one. You need one premier centre midfielder, and then one kind of backup centre midfielder. And you do need, unfortunately, you need to make a big signing as a striker. You need a 9 at some point. I don't know if it's this year or next year, but you need number 9. Because Alcácer is not going to cut it. And Suarez is, you know, it's crazy because he's got Suarez has, 20 or almost 30 goals this year?
For sure.
But Suarez is not what Suarez was. And that's going to hurt you, because even the goals he's getting, yes, he's scoring a lot, but he's not scoring the vital goals in games. And he's really struggling to, I mean, his finishing, unfortunately, he's been a great player for so long, but his finishing is not as reliable as it once was. And I think someone like that needs a threat, actually.
For me, for me, it's what you're saying, but also the fact that he's not really challenged, you know, because Paco Alcácer, he's not really an alternative.
No, exactly. It's a challenge. And he responds to that. And he needs someone to shake that up.
So
really does.
Griezmann?
Ooh, Griezmann is interesting because, do you know what's worrying about Griezmann? He's not a pure 9 as far as I can see. He's more of a false 9. I just worry. Do you know what it is? I worry with a player like Griezmann because he's not imposing, because he moves. I mean, it's almost like his strength is his weakness. His strength is he can go all across the line. He's not a conventional number 9 figure. But he's not. If you get Griezmann as one of your strikers, you almost become this kind of counter-punching team. And for me, Barcelona plays on the front foot. That's them. They play on the front foot. They're high up. They're in the fight all the time. And they're imposing. They're just more physical. And look, I actually think a player like, they're going to hate me this for saying this, but Harry Kane is the ideal acquisition for you guys. Harry Kane is the player that would solve simultaneously so many problems for Barcelona. He's an extraordinary player. Would give Messi pockets of space to operate in. Dembele goes off the shoulder because Kane is a very good playmaker, actually, and would just fit seamlessly into that style, whether on the break, whether playing in the final third in terms of, like, you know, touch play in around the box, left foot, right foot. He's a complete forward. So for me, Kane is the player.
Right.
Your other concern is then the midfield, actually. Coutinho will do some bit to address that, but, you know, and I think you also need someone at left back to threaten Jordi Alba. I think you need that too. I think you need a bit of that too. I just think that a team of Barcelona's resources needs, you know, it's like United, a little bit more depth to stop players, just to get rid of that complacency, I think.
And that's the key word, complacency, because no one's going to challenge Jordi Alba's starting place. Digne has been decent, but then Deason doesn't really cut it, particularly in the last third of the season when titles actually really matter. Musa, I feel like I've gone to the doctors a little bit with you.
it's a pleasure.
Yeah, it's definitely what we needed. I mean, you've given us a recipe to move forward and basically get over the disappointment that we had, obviously, earlier in the week. where can our listeners find your knowledge and your wisdom online?
Well, it's very kind of you to call it that. Actually, if I can mention two things. If you are interested in my work at all, my Twitter is probably the best thing. So my surname is my Twitter handle, spelled OKWONGA. Anything else I'd like to say? I've got a new band actually called BBXO. You can find us on Spotify. Our first single is called Hard Road to Travel. Please check out those couple of things if you're interested at all. And also, yeah, just keep up the great football. You know, Iniesta is one of my heroes. I was at the Nou Camp last season to watch you beat Valencia 4-2. And it was an absolute joy. And I went expecting to be blown away by Neymar, Suarez and Messi. But as anyone that watched that game knows, Iniesta stole the show. So I've always got a sort of special place in my heart for Don Andres and a lot of the other guys. So yeah, thank you for entertaining me. And I hope you have a much better luck in the big trophy next season.
Well, likewise to Man United, but not in Europe because we are going to go back and win it next time. listeners, if you tap on your app right now, Musa's details are in there. And obviously the band that he just referred to, you can also access it through the show notes. Musa, thank you very much. Have a great evening.
My absolute pleasure.
So, Frances, podcast number 78. We had to talk about Jose Mourinho in the interview, and we had to talk about getting knocked out of the Champions League. Probably our saddest and most negative episode yet, but we're going to move on. And next week, Frances, I can't say anything yet, but you at least can say that we've got some big things coming.
We've got an enormous guest coming on in the next one. And obviously we've got all our patrons who are also enormous, not in size, because obviously that would be disrespectful to say. I'm not going to say that, but they are incredibly important. They support the show, but we also have a very, very, very special guest. And I cannot wait to share that with you. You'll have to come back and find out.
So thanks for listening to the Barcelona podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. Forza Barça.
Forza.